Okay, tonight is a Wednesday, November 29th. This is the women's Mishnah Gemara Shir. We're in the 8th parak of Maseches Chulin, Daf Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Bet.
Hey, Rabotai. Last week, or 2 weeks ago actually, we read one line of the Gemara, two lines of the Gemara, of a statement made by the name of Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel. He actually said two things, and we focused only on one of them. I'm going to reread those two lines and then move on a little and see again Titanic Machloikis HaRishonim. Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Shmuel. Rav Yehuda said the name of Shmuel. It's on the top of page 1. I bracketed it. It's about 8 lines from the top. Ke'ara Shemalach Babasar Asur Le'echol Baroteach. The bowl in which you salted meat, and now the blood comes oozing out of the pores of the meat, you are not permitted to put anything hot in that pot, because the assumption is it will absorb some of the blood that is absorbed into the pot. When you salt meat, the blood comes out, the blood gets absorbed in the pot, and as a result, if you were to put anything hot subsequently, that blood would be extracted from the walls of the pot, and then it would enter your food. And blood that has once moved from the initial cavity of the animal is never permitted to be consumed. Remember, the key word was dam shepiresh, blood that has moved out of its natural cavity. Until it moves, it's fine. And the Gemara said, and we read this next line as well, Shmuel lita'ame. Shmuel agrees with something that he said elsewhere. De Omar Shmuel, maliach harehu ki roseach. When you salt something, it has the halachic status of something that is hot. V'kavush harehu kimavushal. That when you soak something, that is considered as if it's cooked, even in the absence of the medium of heat. And that second halacha is the halacha that we spent the balance of the shir on, understanding the parameters of kavush. And just to remind you, there was a debate how long it has to soak. According to some Rishonim, in order to absorb, it has to soak for 3 days. According to other opinions, only one day, 24 hours, consecutive 24 hours. And we accept that second opinion. Also, there was a debate as to what medium of liquid would be necessary to facilitate this cooking process. Rashi said that it is only vinegar and the like that will generate the cooking process. And most other Rishonim, and we paskin like the second group again, held that if it's in any liquid medium whatsoever, it need not be sharp as vinegar or anything of the sort. As long as you soak it for 24 hours, it is prohibited. We also saw that this halacha has many, many applications to it, not only in relationship to kashrut. We saw the Gemara in Sukkah, which said that if you soak an esrog for 24 hours in any medium of liquid, that etrog is no longer acceptable to be used on the Yontif of Sukkot. Because once you cook it, it forfeits its name as a fruit. It's already a cooked fruit. And cooked fruit is not halachically a fruit to some extent, not completely, but to some extent. So that's what we said. It also applies to bishul akum, that if something is, a Gentile cooks something, not by cooking, but just placing something that's kosher, perfectly kosher, in some water or milk, it's a dairy something, and it soaks in milk for 24 hours, then that's considered as if the Gentile cooked it, and you're not allowed to eat that product, and your utensils, become prohibited until you kosher them. So we saw a wide variety of applications to that particular halacha. Today, we're going to focus on the first halacha of Shmuel, of understanding how potent is the salting process, what type of a vessel are you using to salt your meat, and so on and so forth. But we will start where the Gemara continues, Ki Asa Ravin. Do you have the place? Ki Asa Ravin, where Ravin came and cited Omar Rabbi Yochanan. He stated two halachot which apparently disagree with everything that we said in the last year. Maliach eino kiroteach. Salting is not considered as if it would be hot. Salting alone does absolutely nothing in terms of enabling the blood to be absorbed. It does not. And kavush eino kimavushal. When you soak something for 24 or 72 hours, it is not the halachic equivalent of cooking. So whatever Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel, Ravin is citing in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Ravin is a Chachmei Yerushalmi scholar, and he went down to Bavel, and he was quoting Rabbi Yochanan, his Rebbe, who was a third generation Palestinian Amoraic scholar. So he is of the first generations of Amoraic scholars, but not in Bavel, but in Rabbi Yochanan. There was much travel between Bavel and Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan's Torah was brought to Bavel by many of the students of Rabbi Yochanan, who subsequently went down to Bavel because living conditions were much better in Bavel than they were in Eretz Yisrael. That's one of the reasons why few Jews made Aliyah when they built the second Beit HaMikdash. Ezra tells us only 43,800 Jews came back from Bavel when they were permitted to return and to rebuild the second Beit HaMikdash. And he was furious, was Ezra and Nehemiah, and they tried to... no Kahanim wanted to come. Why leave Teaneck when you can go... why go to Eretz Yisrael? You can live in Teaneck.
What was the total number?
43,000 total. That was it.
Out of how many?
Out of several million. Who left, who only stayed, and Ezra had to threaten that he would give truma. He would tell everybody to give truma to a Levi instead of to a Kohen if the Kohanim did not come back to Eretz Yisrael. How he would have done that is a little difficult because a Levi is not allowed to eat truma, but that's what he said anyhow. Mm-hmm. That's what Ezra said.
Did it work?
With the Kohanim it did. Yeah, because otherwise they would have starved. So that's what the Gemara says. Now comes a critical statement. Omar Abaye. Abaye is a 4th century Babylonian scholar. Ha de Ravin, that which Ravin just reported, that the halacha of maliach and kavush don't exist. Salting doesn't enable something to absorb, and soaking does not enable something to absorb. Ha de Ravin lesa. Just junk, Ravin's statement. It's not true. It's not true. How do I know that it's not true? Tahahi pincha dehevah be'rab ami. There was a utensil, a pot, made out of earthenware, an earthenware pot, kli cheres, found in Rabbi Ami's house. Rabbi Ami, also an Amoraic scholar. Dimolach be'bisra, and in this earthenware utensil, he soaked meat. He salted his meat. Vitavre, and he smashed the utensil. That's all he said. He smashed the utensil. From this story, I know that Rabbi Ovin is dead wrong. Good. Nobody would go ahead and smash a utensil that could be used a second time. However, this particular utensil is made out of earthenware, kli cheres. Kli cheres has an unusual halachic position, based on a pasuk in the Torah, that it absorbs, but it never purges. It can begin to purge, but you can never succeed in completely purging the taste from something that is made out of cheres. Therefore, for example, you can't kasher it. You can't kasher china. You can't. Because there is no way that it can be purged completely. There is only one way in which a utensil that is made out of cheres can subsequently be used again. You break it. Once you break the utensil, it halachically forfeits its name as a utensil. Then you put it back together again. Poof, you're allowed to use it. Poof, you're allowed to use it. Now you don't have to smash it completely. You don't have to smash it. All you have to do is puncture it sufficiently that it can no longer contain liquid. So, exactly. You just puncture a hole in it on the bottom. Once a utensil has a hole on it and the liquid cannot stand, it's not a utensil any longer. So you puncture it and then you stuff it up. You go to your local pottery expert and they put in some junk, put it in the oven again for a couple of minutes. It dries and shockingly, you're allowed to use it. And we don't assume that all of the residue prohibited item in that pot or plate is going to continue to exude. It's not. It's considered as if it's absolutely parv.
We hold that way?
Of course we hold that way. Yes. It's a pasuk in the Chumash. Ukli cheres yishaver. That's what the Torah says. Break it. Apparently after breaking it, you can fix it again and use it. So, and we will ask a little later, why didn't he want to repair it? But apparently he junked it. But whether he repaired it or not, the mere fact that he broke it is an indication that Rabbi Yovan is wrong. Why did he break it? Because he salted meat in this pot, and he must have assumed that the salt enabled the blood to be absorbed into that utensil. And therefore he felt, if I'm going to use this subsequently to cook a piece of, or put some hot meat in this pot, under those circumstances the blood will be extracted, and I cannot eat that blood any longer under penalty of karet. Therefore, the fact that Rav Ami smashed it is an indication that Ravin doesn't know what he's talking about. Because Rav Ami is also a student of Rav Yochanan. So Rav Ovin must have misheard what his Rebbe said. Because I have proof positive evidence from another student that Rav Ami, who obviously he's not going to disagree with his Rebbe. And as a result, Abaye says he's dead wrong. Now, this is not terribly unusual in the time of the Talmud, because this happens today. There are 5,000 people who are quoting the Rav. Oh, the Rav said this, the Rav said that. Well, which one did he say? Well, sometimes you hear things a little differently. Sometimes you think he said something, and you're quoting him. You're not quoting him accurately. There are lots of people who don't quote the Rav accurately. But here, Rav Ami is a particularly significant Amoraic sage, and if he said it, Abaye is giving greater credibility to Rav Ami than he is to Rav Ovin, to Rabbi Ovin. Fine, that's what the Gemara says. Just as a note, a significant note, Rav Moshe Feinstein, in one of his Tshuvot, says that today, there is a way to kasher a set of china.
Self-cleaning oven.
Correct.
I did it.
And did it survive?
It will survive.
Okay. In a self-cleaning oven, here is what happens. The temperature gets so hot that halachically, the kli is dissolved. It starts to, you know, decompose. And then this continued application of heat reshapes that utensil. That's what Rabbi Moshe Feinstein was told by his son-in-law, Rabbi Tendler, what happens in a self-cleaning cycle. Temperature gets over 1,000 degrees in the oven. So he said, if it can withstand the heat, so I always tell people, try, don't put in the whole set at once. Put in one cup or something, or one plate.
Everything. It takes a long time to do it.
Correct. I know. Can't pile it up. So, under those circumstances, now people today have often inherited very expensive sets of china where the parent or grandparent was not necessarily kosher, and it usually would have to be thrown in the garbage. Now, under these circumstances, you could kasher it, because the halacha of this halacha is that inside that oven it's being broken and reassembled. I've never checked. Haven't put my head into the self-cleaning cycle. Yeah, I know. So that's why it locked. Exactly. So nobody should check whether this is actually happening. And therefore, that's what it says. Fine. Now,
if you didn't use the china for a couple of years,
that's a mistaken notion. Yes. You cannot, if you don't use it for 50 years, it still is prohibited. There is only one place in halacha where we accept this business of 12 months. That's in relationship to stam yenam. It's quoted by the Mordechai in Chulin. Maybe we'll learn it one day. Stam yenam. Our wine today is not really yayin nesach. Yayin nesach is wine that was poured in the context of idolatrous ritual. I don't know of any wine in the world that has been poured for an idolatrous ritual and then it's put it back into the bottle. I've never seen such a thing today. Maybe at that time there was, in the time when there was idolatry. So today, all non-kosher wines is, what I mean, it's handled by a Gentile, is called stam yenam. Stam yenam is usur only midrabanan. Yayin nesach is usur midoraisa, and it's usur ba'achila, b'shtiya, and hana'ah. Can't make a profit. So is stam yenam. It's usur. Stam yenam is usur. 100%. So here, since it's not really a cheftza shel isur, it's not really something that's usur, the Rabbanan have a kula that if you poured wine or you cooked with that wine in a pot, after 12 months of non-use, you're allowed to use those utensils that came in contact with stam yenam. But if there was real non-kosher product in this utensil, 12 months, 20 months, 20 years, make no difference whatsoever, you're not allowed to use it. It's a mistaken notion of that particular halacha. Fine. So the Gemara asks and says as follows. Michte, let us see. Rabbi Ami, Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan hever. Rabbi Ami was a Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan. My time of Tavrei. If Rabbi Yochanan said that salting does absolutely nothing, as Rav Oven claimed Rabbi Yochanan said, my time of Tavrei, why did he break it? Must be lav mishum de shmiele mine de Rabbi Yochanan. There is no other explanation other than the fact that he heard from Rabbi Yochanan de Omar maliach harehu kiroseach, that salting is the equivalent of heat and helps absorb, therefore he had no alternative but to break it. End of Gemara. Seems to be a rather simple Gemara, but of course it is not. Not a simple Gemara. Not a simple Gemara. Okay, so now go to page number 2 for a minute, which is the Rashba commenting on this Gemara that we just read. Rashba, primary Talmud of the Ramban in Spain. Ki'ara shemolach babasar asur le'echol bo roteach. Kosav hara'avad zal. The Ravid wrote, Debain b'minukevet bain she'ena minukevet ka'amur she'asur le'echol ba roteach. Ravid comes up with a big chiddush. What type of a pot was used for the salting? Mazen nekev a'ol. If this pot in which you salted the meat had a hole in it, what would you and I say about absorption of this blood into this pot? Will it happen or will it not happen? Of course it won't happen. Why not? Because it's going to drip out of the holes. In fact, in Shulchan Aruch it says that the only way that you can salt meat is on a pan, a slick, on a, that's got holes in it. And not only that, as another precaution, how must the plate, it must be on an angle, exactly, slanted, can't be flat. Because if it had, even if it had holes and it was flat, some of the residue blood may, stand in a place where there's no hole and get absorbed. But once it's tilted, that's a famous law of inertia. It's got to happen. If it's tilted, it's going to run down, and you make sure there's a hole on the bottom, it's got to go. That's gravity. It can't necessarily accumulate and absorb. So if we were talking about a pot that did not have a hole, I understand the Gemara. But if it has a hole in it, the Ravid writes, even if the pot, the pot or pan, had a hole in it, and was, you still cannot use that pot ever again for something hot. And he doesn't explain why. That's all he said. That bain minukav, bain she'eno minukav. Whether it has holes or doesn't have holes. And the Rashba is going to challenge him. So all other Rishonim are going to challenge them. Why in the world, if it has holes, can't you use this pot subsequently for hot food? Who cares?
Well, wouldn't it drip out also?
What?
Then you have to plug it.
So what's going to come out? The gravy. That's all. What do I care? But the solid's not going to fall out. Solid's not going to fall out.
You can plug it after that.
Yes.
You think it's okay.
Exactly. 100% you can plug it.
This is a clay that deliberately has holes in it.
Yeah.
Therefore, yeah, poking an additional hole wouldn't make it not a clay anymore. Now I understand why he felt he had to smash it.
No. Because why? It didn't become, it never absorbed anything.
Assuming that it absorbed.
Yeah.
You were wondering why he didn't just poke a hole in it.
No, I wasn't wondering at all. I'm assuming if it had holes,
why does he have to smash it completely?
Correct. Why does he have to do anything to it? It doesn't absorb. Because if it would absorb, you could never kosher any a piece of meat. You could never salt any meat in a pot and ever use that pot again. And indeed, the Ravid does say that. Once you use any pan or pot for salting once, you can never use that one again unless you kosher it. So if you don't kosher, if you don't want to wear, don't use an earthenware utensil to what? To salt your meat. Use a metal utensil. And then what do you do? You boil up water and you put the pot in it, or you just pour boiling hot water on it, all of the on the entire surface. But without koshering it, he doesn't allow you to use it, and nobody understands why.
Even if it's to kosher another piece
yes,
of meat?
Yeah, that's what
it is. Yeah, that's what you
if it's only for
yeah,
koshering meat.
But it, yes, it's not going to be good. Because once the blood comes out, once the if he holds that this pot or this pan has absorbed the previous blood, even though it's got holes in it, I don't understand why, but if he does hold that, now that you take another piece of meat and put salt on it, what is that salt going to do? What is that? It's going to take the blood and be and what pull it out of the wall of the pot and go into your meat.
So not using it again means not for koshering or not only for cooking, but not for koshering.
For nothing. If you want to kosher or use it again, it has to be koshered. So let's use the words carefully. If you want to use it for salting again, we call that koshering it. But we only for salting, you have to kosher the pot first. And nobody can logically understand, conceptually, what is the Ravid worried about when you have blood in a pan that has holes in it. What type of blood could possibly be absorbed in that pan? It's going to be running off as soon as it oozes out of what? Of the meat, it's going to be running off the pan, and that's it.
We deliberately put this on an angle.
Right.
Because otherwise the blood will pool, right?
Yes.
So if the blood comes out of the meat, and then the blood goes down, and it travels down for an inch before it finds a hole and goes out, why shouldn't it be absorbed during that inch of travel?
During that what?
It's moving.
Because, right, exactly. It's not sitting in it.
So
it's not. That's
hard to understand. I mean, it doesn't seem like a problem.
Okay, everybody else did find it difficult. Everybody else did find it. Yeah.
After you did it, your plea would not look clean. You'd see it speaks of blood.
Okay, but I'm not saying it's not. You're right. It's not going to be clean, but the blood would not have sat there long enough for it to absorb. I told you as well, even with heat, if you take something and just put in boiling hot, put it there for a second, that doesn't mean that it's going to extract all the taste from the meat into the pot. You take it off right away and that's it. It's got to sit there for a while and cook in order and get constantly exposed to the heat to extract the taste. So the Rashba in line number 2 says, Ika Manda Amar, there are others who say, Didafka Bishaina Minu Keves. Only if the pot has no holes in it. Shahadam Mishtahe. Masa Shaha Shihui. Sits in it. It sits in it. Umitoch Kach Nivla Bikeara. But therefore it would be absorbed in the pot. Avabominu keves lo didam mishrak shari. The mishrak shari. The blood is running down the slant. Sheim ein ata omer kain nimtzeit omer sheasur limloach shnei pamim bekli echad. And the Rashba said, my mom, I saw her use the same pan every single time. All our mothers, when they ever did it, they had a pan that was designated, of course. And how many had a little thing, a special thing for liver? Right? That little contraption that you squeeze over there, it opens up, you put the liver in, and you hold it over the fire.
Right?
Exactly. That's how you made liver. The chopper. No. This is the real liver. The liver. Right. That's the liver steak. Right.
So you're saying we were wrong.
What?
That's what we're learning, that it was wrong.
No, he's saying that the Rashba, the Ravid's wrong, because otherwise every mother in the world.
That's what I thought I'm coming home with, because every week it's something. So,
yeah. Sure. And as you well know, once if I mention liver, the reason why we eat liver the way we eat it is because there is so much blood in a piece of liver that the halacha does not think that salting will get the blood out. It will never get the blood out. There's so much blood in it. And therefore, the only way in which you're allowed to eat it is if it's cooked over an open fire. So when Mom used to do, I remember her doing that, with the liver thing, it's in that little crate, and all the other, the blood that comes out is what? Is burnt on the fire. Any blood that doesn't come out, you're allowed to eat. You're allowed to eat that blood. So therefore, you can never cook liver in a pot. You can never cook liver, even if you salted it for 20 hours. Because the halacha says, "I efshar lehotzi et kol hadam," from a piece of kaved, a piece of liver. You can't. It's impossible. So that's the only way to eat liver if it's made over a fire. Over a fire. Yeah. Mr. Weber in YU. Remember Mr. Weber? In the cafeteria? Don't remember? That man, when that Shaina Hadras Punim came from Borough Park with us every day. Morose beef! He'd call into the back. But they used to have a piece, they used to have good liver steak. So very good liver steak. Very good liver steak. Excellent. On the special. No, it wasn't special. Wasn't it? In YU was $7 at the time. I know. Now, listen to the Ramban who's going to try to defend the Ravid. The Haramban Zal Kosav. V'li nira k'divrei ha-Ravid zal. I happen to think that the Ravid might be right. Listen to this. Mishum delo adifa ke'ara mechatichat nevela. Wow. A pot is not any better than a piece of nevela meat. Let me explain what he has in mind. Once you have blood in this particular pan, so the Ramban is going to argue like Naomi. It is impossible that some of the blood will not be absorbed. So once a drop of blood has been absorbed in this pot, I, the Ramban, compare it, the pot is now as if it would be a piece of nevela. A piece of nevela. Why is it a piece of nevela? Because it absorbs something that you're not allowed to eat. So this whole pot now becomes a piece of nevela. So would anybody ever take a piece of nevela and what? Cook it in another pot and use it another time with something that's kosher? No. So when I put my second piece of meat in this pot, what am I doing with my kosher piece of meat? What am I putting it on? A piece of nevela meat. And it's going to be salting, and what's going to happen? The taste is going to transfer from one piece of meat to the next piece of meat. That's what the Ramban said. I can understand the right. Later on, the Ramban says, I agree with what the Rashba. In fact, he was before the Rashba. But he accepts that opinion. But he wanted to say something in defense of the Ravid. That the Ravid was of the opinion that even though the overwhelming majority of the blood will what? Will come out, some of the blood, as even though it's Mishrak Sharik, it's moving. And we normally think that in order for absorption to take place, the prohibiting agent has to be stationary to give it a chance to soak in. But just running by over it and it is almost impossible. That's what we believe. But the Raivit did not believe that. And therefore it now becomes as if it's what? A piece of nevela. And hence, the Raivit says, every time you want to kasher a piece of meat, salt it, you need another utensil. Unless you kashered, really kashered, the previous piece. Thank God we don't paskin, we never paskined like the Raivit. Thank God we never did. Yeah. Now, that's point number one. Point number one. Point number two. Go back to the Gemara for a second. When we were told, when we started tonight, we were told about two halachot cited by Rabbi Yehuda in the name of Samuel. One was Malicha, and what is the other one? No, you could not have forgotten.
What is soaking?
Soaking. Good. So good. Now, what the Gemara did was, Rav Avin quoted Rabbi Yochanan for both halachot. He said Rabbi Yochanan never said either of those halachot. That Maliach doesn't absorb, nor does what absorb, said Rav Avin and Rabbi Yochanan? Soaking. Good. Now the Gemara only quoted a story in regard to how many of the two halachot? Only one of them. There is no further information concerning what is the bottom line concerning absorption. Should we accept Shmuel's opinion, who says that what? That Shmuel says Kavosh is Kimavushal? Or should we accept Rabbi Avin citing Rabbi Yochanan, who said that kavush soaking does absolutely nothing? We have no answer in the Gemara, because the Gemara doesn't address it further. So some Rishonim say, what the Gemara rejects, and what the Gemara doesn't reject, it doesn't reject. So now, any posek has a right to formulate the halacha in line of who he sees fit. You want to follow Shmuel? Shmuel says that soaking does absorb. And it's considered like cooking. You want to follow Rabbi Yochanan? Don't. You want to follow? Be my guest. Follow Rabbi Yochanan. The problem is that whenever Rabbi Yochanan argues with anybody, the halacha is usually like him, except if he argues with Rav. Except if he argues with Rav. I told you many times that there are what is called klalei hora'ah. There are rules of how to paskin. Because otherwise you would never know what to do. The Talmud is so full of diverse opinions that we would get stuck. You'd scratch your head. What do I do now? So the Gemara helped us by establishing rules of psak. So one of the rules are, Rabbi Yochanan trumps everybody except Rav. Well, Shmuel is not Rav. So the halacha should be like Rabbi Yochanan. The question is, if we reject Rabbi Ovin's testimony about his Rebbe, apparently he blew it, about salting, does he now have reliability that, you know what, he's quoting his Rebbe appropriately in relationship to what? Soaking. We don't know. Because Rabbi Yochanan never opened up his mouth in this sugya. He's always being quoted. Quoted. So, I want you to look at Rashi and see if you can identify what some Rishonim believe Rashi is trying to communicate to us. The Rashi reads, the caption is Ha Deravin. It's right to the left of that last bottom bracket after the word Roseach. You see there's a bracket. Go to the left, one line above it is Rashi commenting about Ha Deravin, that which Ravin said. Look at what Rashi says. What does Rashi say, Rabotai? What does Rabbi? What does he say? The what? Ha the Ravin. The Omer Rabbi Yochanan Mekil Lessa. Maza Lessa? It's not true. The Rashi adds, Had the Ravin, that which Ravin quoted in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, said that Rabbi Yochanan was lenient, Lessa doesn't exist. That's what Rashi says is the implication of the Gemara. Now, some explain that Rashi is really trying to put some teeth into what? Attacking Rav Avin. The fact that Rav Avin was proven wrong by Rav Ami, I don't need Rashi to tell me that Rav Yochanan never said what he said about the salting issue. Because I have a tremendous story that tells us that the salting issue is a salt, is a concern. Because what did Rav Ami do with that utensil that he salted the meat in? What did he do? He smashed it. So I don't need to tell me that when somebody is quoting, I don't need Rashi to tell me that when somebody is quoting Rabbi Yochanan as being lenient, that's not true. So if Rashi is going out of his way to make a statement that which Rabbi Avin is quoting Rabbi Yochanan as being lenient, lesser, doesn't exist, what do you think Rashi is trying to include in that statement? And even the soaking issue, he didn't know what he was talking about, even though we have no technical evidence in the Gemara. Rashi believes that once you are proven to be inaccurate in your communication of your Rebbe, anything that you said in the name of your Rebbe is now suspect. You didn't listen very carefully during the shiur.
Isn't it a little embarrassing to
publish? No, of course not. Rashi is doing... Rashi... there's so much worse than that. So much worse. Rashi is doing us a favor. He's trying to tell us the halacha.
I know, but he's...
And also the Gemara says nothing about the issue. What did Rabbi Yochanan say about soaking? That's the issue that I raised. Because the first opinion said that soaking and salting is an issue. Rabbi Avin is quoting Rabbi Yochanan saying neither is an issue. The Gemara rejected Rabbi Avin about salting from the story of Rav Ami. Well, we're left in the dark about what happens with soaking. So Rashi says the way Rabbi Avin has been pushed aside, apparently anything he quotes Rabbi Yochanan as going lekula, at least that he's too lenient. Rabbi Yochanan is lenient. Reject that. Lesser doesn't exist.
Often we would say the opposite. By the mere fact that he didn't bring a story about the soaking is obviously not included in this, because otherwise...
Okay, that's the way other... That's the way other Rishonim say. Other Rishonim say, you're reading much too much into Rashi's words, and the Gemara did not cite a challenging story to Rabbi Ovin's report. So now you have a choice. You can follow Rabbi Yochanan and say for Maliach, but you have nothing to say about Rabbi Yochanan about soaking. So what are we left with if we have nothing countering Rabbi Yochanan? If we have nothing countering? So we have a machloikis between Rabbi Yochanan and Shmuel. That's all. So what's the... Right. But... The problem is that I told you we normally paskin like Rabbi Yochanan, but we learned last time that the halacha in Shulchan Aruch is like Shmuel. That if you soak a piece of meat in milk for 24 hours with zero heat, it becomes basa b'chalav. We paskin that way. We do. So we would be paskining like Shmuel against Rabbi Yochanan, which is somewhat against the norm. But I wanted you to see that Rashi, because some Rishonim say that Rashi is telling us just disregard Rabbi Ovin's citation of his Rebbe completely. Completely. Rabbi Ovin, the name of Rabbi Yochanan? Oh yeah, many times. And we don't necessarily push him aside because, say, he's not a good Talmud. It was in this regard because he quoted him in the same Pepeah B'Neshima Achaz. Maliach is no problem. Mevushal is no problem. So that's sheer. He was sleeping a little. That's all. Yes. Yeah. Where are they? They're in the Gemara. Scattered all over the place. That is correct. And in fact, there is somebody who did you a favor. At the end of Masechet Brachot, there is a commentary called Klalei HaTalmud. All of the rules of the Talmud. And this guy went through all the Shas, and he gathered all the rules, and he prints it nice and handily for you to look it up tonight. If you don't want to watch the Nick game, you know. Yeah. So, take a look now at, page 5 for a minute. And this is the Ritva. He's another student of the Ramban. Many of the commentaries are troubled as to why Rav Ami had to break that utensil. Tell me how he could have used it without breaking it completely, without doing anything to it. Tell me, based on your knowledge, what he could have used that bowl for. Exactly. Sonen. He can serve his grandchildren ice cream in that bowl. Why can he serve tzonen? Why? Because tzonen can't extract the taste of the blood. So why did he throw it out? Why did he break it?
Well, practically speaking, you don't want to have something in your house that can only be used for
cold. Okay. So the Ritva brings this up in the first line. For Omer Rabbeinu, actually start the paragraph before. Hahu Pincha, this earthenware utensil. Peirush Rashi, Ke'ara Shel Cheres, it was a bowl made out of earth. She'ein La Takana Bahagala, that can never be kashered. Umishum hachi tavra. Therefore, Rabami smashed it. V'im tomar, I'd like to ask you, yishhena litzonan. Why don't you just what? Keep it for cold. Yeshlomar, kevan d'urcha b'chamin, v'lochazya lahachi, asur lish hashota litzonan shema yevashelcha. Says the Ritva, I'll tell you why he didn't keep it in the house for cold. Because it was not the type of utensil that you normally serve ice cream in. It's normally used what? To cook something. And if it's normally used for cooking and not for cold, we're afraid that you're going to use it in its normal use. Therefore, what was the only available approach? Breaking it and then refixing it. That's what the Ritva says. Yeah. Asks the Ritva another question. Yinakvena, the yishtamish ba b'melicha. Just make another hole in it. That's what somebody else said. Make another hole in it. And what can you do once you make another hole in it? Use it again for salting. So every time you have to salt it, you just make another hole. If you keep using this earthenware utensil, eventually you're going to make so many holes, not going to be able to do anything. Yeah.
All right, that's what I'm trying to make you do. If when you have a bowl specifically meant for salting, it needs to have a hole in it.
Yes.
Right? That's the rule. Then making a second hole doesn't break it. Because this is the kind of thing that's supposed to have holes. Mm-hmm.
No, there's no such thing as a made salting utensil. The halacha doesn't know that there is such a thing called a salting utensil. Any utensil in the world can be used for salting.
You don't have to have
holes in it? You make a hole in it, that's all. Make one.
But if you make it a hole... The reason we said making a hole... released the, you know, kind of gave it a reset, was because it was no longer a clay.
Correct. So, the Ritva could be reacting to the Ravid, which he is. The Ravid said you can't use it even if you did the initial salting in what type of a utensil? It had holes, it had no holes in it. It was Eina Minu Kevit. Remember the Ravid said that? So let's assume that was the case here. So now what do you do? Now what do you do? Make a hole in it. Now what can you do? Now it's a new utensil. What happens? You use it for at least a second time. So why did he have to smash it completely? He could have used this utensil, which had no holes up until now. After all, the Ravid says that the Gemara is talking about whether, we don't understand it, but he says it's both, whether with holes or without holes. He's talking about you used it with no holes. But why do you have to smash it? Make a hole, use it again. What's the problem? That's his question.
Right, but I still feel like the reason he said that works, making a hole in it, is because we said it's no longer a clay, it's unusable.
Correct.
But that's not true. It's not. But it's usable. In fact, Doctor, you want a hole in it.
But it's not measured. It's not measured by the use of salting. The definition of a utensil is not measured by the use of salting.
Okay.
Take a look at page 6, and let's see how the Shulchan Aruch rules on this issue. So number one, in Sif Tezayin, in the middle of the page, it says, a molchin ella bikli minukav. You can never salt in a pot that has no holes in it. It's got to have holes. O al gabe kashin v'kismin. What is kash?
Straw.
You can salt something on straw. Because what's going to happen to the blood? It's going to get absorbed by the straw, not going to remain in your pot. Obimakom midron, or any place on a slant, on a mountain. So you can just go ahead and take a piece of meat and just let the blood salt it right there. Beinyan she'im yishafech shamayim yetzu miyad. The point is that if it's going to roll off, if you put any liquid on it, then you know it's not standing still, and it will definitely not absorb. Not absorb. Go now to Seif Yudches. Basar shenimlach bikli she'eino minukav. If you salted meat in a utensil that did not have any holes in it, v'shahabo. Now you allowed the meat to sit. Kishiur sheyitnu mayim al eish v'yatchilu leharsiach.
the amount of time it takes to boil one.
Exactly. It has to be sitting there at least the equivalent of the amount of time that it takes to boil water. So how long does it take to boil water? Depends how much water you add. So okay, he didn't tell us how much. But whatever it is, even if you have just for one cup of aglaza latte, it's going to take a minute or so. Right? It's going to take a minute. The point is that if it doesn't take any time, maliach can't be better than real heat. Maliach cannot be better than real heat. So if the meat which you are soaking, the blood comes out, and you pick up the piece of meat as soon as it began to fill up and soak in that blood, so the Mechaber says, that's not boiling, because it doesn't happen instantly. So what would you be obligated to do in order to have a piece of meat? What would you have to do in order to eat a piece of meat? You have to wash it off. So that any of the residue blood that's there, it wouldn't have been absorbed, but there is blood on it, so just wash it off and that's it. Wash off the piece of meat. Yeah.
Is there anything to the fact that the property of blood is that it will coagulate if it gathers?
I have not seen that. It's an interesting point of view, but I haven't seen that.
Yeah.
There is.
Yes.
There is. So if you decide, it's got to be at least an hour. It has to soak on it for an hour, which is way more than what. So now, but when you do it, what are you supposed to have? A pot with holes in it. This guy started off with a pot without holes, and then, oh my God, what am I doing? So if it sat long enough to be the equivalent of how long it would take to boil a cup of water, then that pot becomes absorbed with blood. But if you picked up the meat before the minute had lapsed, under those circumstances, there is nothing to worry about for the pot. Because salting, transferring taste into the wall of the pot, cannot be superior to heat. And heat does not help absorb something immediately. It has to have at least the capacity to the time that it would have taken to boil up a little water.
What would that piece of meat be called?
What would be?
What would that piece of meat?
It would not be kashered yet, but and just wash it off. No more. Now you kasher properly. Or just roast it. You can always eat meat without salting by just roasting it over an open fire at the barbecue on a barbecue. That's a lot of people ate meat that way if they're on salt free diets, they could not salt the meat. So the only way you could eat it is by taking it, putting it on a tray, let the blood come out, and whatever blood is remaining is mutter. Our minhag is that even if you roast, technically you don't have to salt at all. But the minhag is, the Rama writes, v'noagin limloach kitzat. The minhag is that even if you're roasting and it's not going to sit in a pot, to put some, and there many even say you can use regular table salt, doesn't have to be the kosher salt, because it's not really required. It's just to get you into the habit of doing something for kashering the piece of meat by taking out the salt, by taking the blood out. Yeah. All right. We'll stop here and continue next to Bach with the new subject.